What's going on, guys? This is the grittiest podcast you'll ever meet of the grittiest guys about the number one sports class. I'm just saying that because I'm passing a little gas right now, but this is Teeing It Up with CNV. I'm your host, Connor, as always with my co-host, the V of CNV. Laddie, what's going on, man?
I'm doing all right. I had probably one of the worst sports weekends of my life that I can remember, and this kind of extends into Monday as well. Saturday afternoon, I watch Real Madrid just get humiliated in El Clasico because of one of the worst performances, if not the worst performance I've ever seen from a Real Madrid player by Kylian Mbappe. And then our fullbacks are make-a-wish players. That extends into Saturday night, where we'll watch Michigan State lose. We'll talk about that, obviously. Then into Monday afternoon, where Vinny Jr. is robbed of a Ballon d'Or. Then into Monday night, where I have one of the stupidest fantasy weeks of my life. I'm in three different leagues. I finished 1 and 2, and my two losses were in leagues where I tried to win, and my one win was in a league where I try to lose. And one of my losses, I put up the third most amount of points in league history, and I lost because my opponent put up the second most amount of points in league history and beat
Wow.
me by, I think, like, half a point. So there's that, which is great. But yeah, not a great sports weekend for me, but we're doing better now. It's a short weekend. When people are listening tomorrow or today, it'll be my Friday. So we love to see that. How are you?
I'm good. Coming down with a little bit of a head cold today, and I just ate a Chipotle bowl that is literally my stomach might be audible on them on this podcast throughout. So bear with me on that. But yeah, I'm good. I don't know. Not much to say. Got rid of the moot court stuff, so now we're chugging along into kind of the latter quarter or latter two-thirds of the semester. It's a weird week. Obviously, everything amped up with all the election nonsense that's going to go on. 5 days away from when people listen to this is just kind of maybe in my psyche just umped everything up. But that's not what we talk about in this podcast. So let's get into the sport the sports. I understand Michigan State basketball is going to start by the time we play. They're going to play Monmouth, and I don't even remember the other team. I think like.
Was it Hofstra?
Whatever. Who could? No, it's like a recognizable name, but well, now I want to know. Niagara, I want to
Oh,
say.
cool.
Niagara. Yep. So two games that they should win. I know, barring something from last year where they play the greatest becoming of a non-power five school in James Madison, we should be okay, and we'll do more of an in-depth preview for the Kansas in the game in the Champions Classic next week. Today we'll stick with football, and we'll start with kind of the big, like you mentioned, the big topic in football in this state was the Michigan State game. State jumps off to an early lead. They play, I don't want to say as good as you can play, but they played very well in the first half. There's a missed field goal, and next thing you know, Aiden Childs' turnover at the end of the half, and Michigan's winning, and it was kind of all Michigan with Michigan State playing a catch up the second half. 24-17, Michigan wins for the third straight season. It's now firmly their rivalry. It's all theirs, even in a year where they are barely a bowl team. I'm going to say they're a bowl team, but barely a bowl team.
We made them a bowl
Michigan
team
State.
by we made them a bowl team by giving them this game. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, and I don't even know if that's a given. I we'll talk about state schedule moving forward, but Michigan's is a bit of a gauntlet down the stretch here. They play
They're not losing to Northwestern, don't worry.
but the other three, they might lose by a combined 150
That's
points.
still 6 wins in a bowl.
You're right, that is 6 wins. Sorry. So we'll say barely a bowl. But Michigan State still can't get it done. And I'm gonna start with it's interesting. I think Jonathan Smith, obviously, all the fighting after, and I don't even know how much I want to talk about that because I don't think it was quite as big of a thing for me as 2 years ago when the Michigan State players got into it in the tunnel. As I get my finger stuck in my drawer. But an introduction to this rivalry. Obviously, first time there's been two new head coaches on both sides since Lloyd Carr and Nick Saban in 1995. But and I'm blanking on why am I freaking blanking on the Michigan's coach's name? Holy crap, I'm having a brain fart here.
Didn't you literally start with, or are you talking about Sharon Moore?
Yeah, why could I wanted to call him Brad Holmes for some reason. I was like, that's not right.
That's
With Sharon Moore and Jonathan Smith, but Sharon Moore has been in this rivalry as an assistant and a offensive coordinator as recently as last year. Jonathan Smith, not knowing much about this rivalry, was very well introduced, and I think his comments after the game showed this wasn't what he thought it was going to be, and it ultimately showed out in the end that he was just not re ready for this type of rivalry game.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the message, and I think that's him trying to kind of maybe
Up his
save,
program.
yeah,
Yeah.
not necessarily save his program because he's not in trouble, but it's, I think it's to try and like draw some of the blame away from the players, because I do think most of this loss was on the players. I think you did everything right in the first half, and the fact that you were only leading, actually leading, you went into
You're down.
halftime losing a football game that
Yeah.
you dominated.
That's
So
when I knew this game was over. It's like as well as Michigan could have played. It was like similar to the Iowa game last week, in that Michigan State dominated, had the ball the entire time, had the only scores in the game, and yet they were one score away from this being not their game anymore. This was even more so. They were losing at the half, and I knew they were in trouble, because they couldn't have played necessarily better aside from the Aiden Childs fumble at the end, and that's just another freshman mistake.
yeah, I think we talked before this. This is going to be a battle of two teams that are shit. And when two teams that are shit play each other, it's who's going to give less away for the other team. And that was Michigan. Michigan State handed them that victory. I mean, this doesn't mean much because both of these teams are bad, but Michigan didn't win that game. We lost it. You miss a field goal from 20 yards after we spend an
Yeah.
entire weekend glazing Jonathan Kim saying he's kicking on Sundays. Also, I've
No.
rewatched that video a couple times. Where did the ball go? I don't see it on the video.
Yeah.
I
I didn't
don't know
really.
where
I
it
just
is.
kind of saw the refs like go no good. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Not to
Was
mention, you
interesting.
have fourth and goal at the two, and instead of taking a timeout because you were clearly running a play, you take the delay of game. Don't understand that. If your plan is to, like, you really want this touchdown, take a fucking timeout. It's the first half. You don't need to save him for the end. So that I didn't understand, but you come away with 0 points on your first drive. You go right down the field on your second drive. Perfect. Very nice. And then on, I think it's your third or your fourth drive where you have about 40 seconds left in your own 30, and Aiden Childs gets strip sacked, and you hand another 3 points away to Michigan. And like I said, a game you absolutely dominate. You turn around, you go into halftime, you look at the scoreboard, and you're like, holy shit, how are we losing this football game? And then at the end of the game, those 6 points that we were given away, or that we gave away, came up to rear their ugly head, because on fourth and goal from the 20, or fourth and goal and fourth and five from like the 10, 15 yard line, instead of us lining up Jonathan Kim to kick what could be a chip shot, I guess can't really call that a chip shot anymore because he really struggles from short apparently. But instead of doing that, you sit there and you're down seven, so you have to go for it. Also, Aiden Childs might have had a way to run for the first down, but he just kind of stopped and threw it across his body into quintuple coverage. I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
And this will lead me into another point with Aiden and kind of what I saw today, or that with that day, that really I didn't understand. But this game was funny because when I was, we were in Royal Oak at a Bar Louie watching it. And as I was leaving it, I was a little sad. And then I slept on it, and I slept on it again, and I thought more about it. And now I'm just upset. How the fuck do you give that game away? That's the worst Michigan team we've seen in 15 years. The Brady Hoke teams were not that bad. And then, with all due respect, they were not. We
I
just
think
weren't
that's the
that good
most
at the time.
frustrating part is
Yeah.
that, like, and that's what frustrates me in the grand scheme of this rivalry right now is, yeah, like I'll take the losses to what was a top three team in the country the last three seasons, all three seasons, but no matter how bad Michigan State is, it's unacceptable to lose to these types of Michigan teams in these
These
rivalry
types
games.
of anything teams, like if you
You're
strip the logos away, strip the rivalry, if you take That, again, take the logo and the colors off those uniforms. If you lose to that type of football team that cannot throw the ball, that's defense is apparently so good with their best players missing, they didn't really stop us first 30 of the minutes. That's an unacceptable loss in any way, shape, or form.
And even on that top of that, like Michigan State right now as a program, I'm sorry to say, but you're measured on how you play Michigan right now.
Yeah,
You're
absolutely.
not a national contender. You're not a playoff contender. You're not even really a contender in the Big Ten until proven otherwise. And your season is measured by how you play Michigan. And you played a bad, like you said, strip the logos off. This is a bad to average team. And you went out and laid an egg.
Yeah, so I mentioned the Aiden thing. That turnover was costly, and it kind of, to me, it dealt with the same principle as at the end of the game where he doesn't make a push for the pylon and he decides to throw some suicide pass. He looks so casual in that pocket where when he's moving around. I
Yeah.
understand you do have to keep your head up, so you can't always just be running around in circles. But you look at a Lamar Jackson, you look at a Caleb Williams, you look at a Jaden Daniels navigate the pocket. If they're scrambling around to try and, let's say, basically restart the play so their guys can kind of play some backyard football, they're sprinting. I don't think I've ever seen Aiden Childs sprint around in the pocket. He that fumble,
No,
he's
you're right.
sitting there, and it's like in Madden or college football. If you're trying to use your quarterback and you're behind the line of scrimmage, the game doesn't let you sprint. All you do is just jog left and right, and the defenders kill you. That's the entirety of that fumble. Is he had no awareness of what was going on, no idea who was chasing him, and no urgency to take off. And it was the same thing at the end of the game where, dude, you are physically gifted. Take off. It's you versus one guy for a 5-yard run. Bet on yourself. Go. And that part annoys me a little bit. I'd like to see a little bit more urgency out of him in the pocket where, again, I understand you do have to also scan the field and see if a guy gets open or see if you can find a lane to throw. I definitely understand that. But make sure you're still going to be alive by the time your guy does get open. Look at Jaden Daniels at the Hail Mary against the Chicago Bears. Did you watch him extend that play for 15 seconds where he was actually sprinting around to try and get away from a defensive end and then kind of reset it back into the pocket? Try doing that. So that part annoyed me. We wasted a Nate Carter legacy game. He was the best player on the field from either side. He almost looked like David Montgomery. Wasn't going down on first contact. Everything was falling
I like that.
forward. Looked like he had a little bit of juice when in kind of prior games this year specifically. He's kind of looked just like a late years LJ Scott, where it's like, oh my God, this kid was sick 3 years ago, but since then, the only thing he's done is get arrested for driving without a license. It was just frustrating. I mean, the offensive game plan, and this is where I kind of maybe shift a
This
little bit
is what
to
I
this
wanted
is
to get
where
into
Jonathan
next,
Smith gets
too.
a little bit of flack. I don't think this is not understanding the rivalry. This is just not understanding yourself. How the fuck do you throw one pass down the sticks? I recall that game. One pass was thrown past the first down markers the entire game, and that's when Montori Foster beat his guy by 3 steps and Aiden underthrows him. If Aiden throws that in stride, Montori Foster is still running 4 days later as we speak. He's still running.
I don't actually quite have like the problem is he was so bad at the beginning of the season for me that even this version of Aiden Childs has been better the last like 3 weeks here now. And I think it's because they don't trust him to throw the ball down the field. They don't trust him to throw it 30 plus times in a game. And that's the problem is when you get behind by a touchdown or more in the second half, you're just not going to beat anybody doing that. And I don't know whether that's like the fault of Jonathan Smith for not adjusting, or it's if it's just they know what they have and that's their game plan. And yeah, it works when you get up to a 12-0 lead against Iowa, you can bury them, and Aiden Childs can have more options because the run game's been opened up. But when you get behind like this in the second half, you can't do it. You just don't have the personnel to do it. So I honestly don't know who the frustration falls on, the fact that you don't have the personnel to make the adjustment, or the fact that you just didn't do it or didn't even try it. I guess I'm kind of in open arms and kind of shrug my shoulders at who I put the blame on, because it's both.
Took Nick Marsh, I think, 3 quarters to catch a pass, if I'm not mistaken. That's unacceptable. And then the defensive game plan, and specifically the fact that they have one player worth a damn, one player who's worthy of breathing oxygen. That's Colston Loveland. And you let him abuse you. You let him beat you on a trick play where you lose contain. You let him get open on kind of these just drag routes, seam routes. And I don't understand that part. And then even more infuriating, especially at the end of the game, just because this guy's first downs kind of killed us, is if Alex Orji is on the field, he's not throwing. Why is there not 11 players in the box?
Do you want to hear Alex Orji's stat line?
Zero for zero, but
Six
10.
carries, 64 yards, a touchdown, zero passing attempts.
Yeah, no, I don't understand it. You know, if this guy is on the field, if he walks out of the sideline and into the huddle, they're not throwing. Like, what? Like, again, obviously saying 11 guys should be in the box is a little bit of hyperbole.
Right,
But
of
what the
course.
fuck are you doing with two high safeties you have to play some NFL prevent defense because Patrick Mahomes and Xavier Worthy on the other side? Are you kidding me? That part really pissed me off. And like I said, I was sad after the game because no one likes losing to Michigan. I was upset and a little annoyed, if not mad, if you can hear me speak, as
Yeah.
I digested the game and what I just witnessed. Michigan did not win that game. We lost it. End of. That was disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess big time outlook. Like I mentioned earlier, you're measured on this game. This season is now a failure. You still have a chance to make a bowl game. You got to win two of your next four. But I don't know if that's possible even with the schedule.
Oh, come on. You can beat Purdue. You can beat Rutgers, or we already played Rutgers.
No, we still play Rutgers. I
You
don't
can
think
beat
that's a
Rutgers.
guarantee.
Oh, come on.
Indiana's a for sure loss.
Are they?
They're only an 8-point favorite, so maybe not.
Are they? Is Tommy Roark playing? Do you know?
I believe in them personally, but going around the rest of the college football, unless you have anything to add.
No, nothing more for Michigan State.
I'll call this week the week of what could have been. There was a lot of scares. Some teams were kind of put on upset watch or had some scares go late into the second half, but none of them ended up coming to fruition. And thus, this week was kind of seen in our minds as boring. I talk specifically Ohio State had the Nebraska scare. Texas had a Vanderbilt scare. Wisconsin played Penn State well into the second half. I know that Penn State played with a backup quarterback for most of that game. Duke almost beat SMU in overtime. So it was kind of the weekend of what could have been, but all the favorites kind of pulled out. The only, I guess, true non-betting favorite that won as far as ranked teams was A&M beating LSU. And that's again just Brian Kelly can't win the games that actually mattered. You got embarrassed in the second half against USC week one, and then you fight your way back to the top eight because you've played. I'll read you who they've played since then: Nicholls State, South Carolina, UCLA, South Alabama. You beat Ole Miss in overtime. Arkansas, you didn't play a single team worth a damn. And then you get under the lights in Texas A&M in prime time. And what do? Your second opportunity in prime time, you go Brian Kelly. You have a lead in the second half, and you just get absolutely annihilated on defense in that second half.
It's pretty funny. So I did actually have something written down for this game, so I didn't get to watch. And you kind of texted me, "Oh, what a collapse from LSU." And so I pulled up the box score. So LSU leads 17-7 at halftime, and then here are their possessions after the half: punt, pick, fumble, pick, TD, pick, downs.
Oof.
That's can't have that, guys. Can't have that.
No. No, I don't like that's kind of it. Like I said, I didn't get to watch much of Ohio State. They were a scare. Texas was actually a really good game. I know Vanderbilt was ranked. They won't be now. And then Penn State, I haven't seen anything on I call him Sean Clifford for two times now. Drew Aller status. But I think they're only a 3-point dog right now. I know it's going to be a home game for them, which is a little different atmosphere when they're at home. But even without a very mid Drew Aller, this team has no chance against Ohio State if the backup quarterback plays again. Although he did do a good job in relief. That's kind of really the only other note I think I have on the, I'll let you go in a second here, is unfortunately the Army Navy lost. Everyone said, oh, but they play Notre Dame. They could just beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame put an absolute beat down on Navy on Saturday.
Absolutely, but they can still play each other in the AAC title game and then hope for
Yeah.
some Boise State madness, maybe a loss there and one of them can get in the playoff. But yeah, no, you're right. That was kind of a Notre Dame shellacking. I think Navy kind of contributed with some turnovers, which are uncharacteristic, but I can't say I watched any of that game or was like truly immersed in it. So don't have much more to say. And I don't have much more to say at the collegiate level.
Yeah. And we, I, Notre Dame, I look at their schedule and I know we said, like, oh, with their schedule, they're going to have to win out, but they're in a really good spot to win out. They play a 1-7 Florida State team, a 4-4 Virginia team at home. They do play Army, who we saw what they did to a naval academy, or a naval, a military academy last week. And then they'll play a very average USC team on the road to end the season. So still very much in their grasp.
Probably won't even be a road game with the way the Irish travel. They'll probably be a
Right.
home game considering nobody goes to the Coliseum.
Although I will say, like, of all the sports in LA, it seems like USC football is actually king, I think. Besides, like, the Lakers and the Dodgers, like, after that, I kind of believe it's USC football.
Yeah. Well, that's only, I think a lot of that's just because the other two franchises at the NFL level don't belong there. I mean, you look at the
Right. That's
St.
true.
Louis Rams and the San Diego Chargers, not the
Sure.
LA versions of both. And
That's
then,
true.
honestly, I've seen jokes about this. The city of LA's favorite football team is the Raiders from when they were the LA Raiders.
I mean, I believe it, I
So, yeah,
guess.
I definitely agree with that kind of USC take. But to the NFL we go.
Start as we always do with the Detroit Football Lions, or as I like to call them, the best team in the NFL right now. I know the Chiefs are undefeated. This is a weird game, and I don't like I we mentioned before we got I don't have a ton of comments because it just kind of happened. It just kind of happened all at once. You get the turnovers. You don't start a drive like anywhere near your side of the field, basically. You play super well on special teams. And next thing you know, you look up and you have a 50 burger. And I'll preface it with this. I do think the Titans are probably the worst team in the NFL, not named the Panthers.
I'd buy that, even though.
But this is a team that's rolling. It's the second time you put up nearly 40, 50 points in 2 weeks. Your least amount of points in the last four, I believe, is 31. And that's last week to Minnesota. I mean, they're clicking on all cylinders right now, and it's something I don't want to like get ahead of myself, but the league hasn't really seen this kind of juggernaut that literally can't be stopped that's putting up production like this.
Yeah, the only issue is, are we peaking too early? Are we
Right.
gonna sit there, use up all of our kind of goodwill, and then we get into the divisional round, and it's like, we sit there with our jaw on the floor because we've lost a home playoff game. I hope not, but to this game specifically, you kind of mentioned the special teams at Turner's. I've never seen a game like this before. Genuinely, like,
Yeah.
yeah, you have like, oh, haha, pick six here and like kick return there. I don't think we started a single drive after the first one. Kind of short of midfield.
40.
Maybe there was
Yeah.
one, like, depending on where the Mason Rudolph pick was thrown, but special teams, you had kick returns, punt returns, a touchdown there, interceptions. Again, I think I joked around with a group chat of our friends, but I don't know what the NFL record is for starting field position by an offense, but we either shattered it or we're very, very close to breaking it because. Like I said, everything always looked, oh, starting at the Titans 30, starting at the Titans 27, starting at the Titans 20, starting at the Titans 40. It's like, I've never seen a game like that. And
Yeah.
you look at that offense, and yeah, they scored six offensive touchdowns. And you're like, wow, those are some great statistics. I don't even think the offense did anything. They just capitalized on where they started. And then it was, oh, yeah, just lean on the run game. Oh, Jahmyr Gibbs will break one for 70 yards. And I know for last week, we talked about the classic stat of, for the first time in a 4 year span or a 4 week span, a team's got more touchdowns and incompletions. That stat only grew wider. We had six offensive touchdowns and three incompletions for Jared Goff. You have another trick play with David Montgomery throwing a touchdown pass to Sam Laporta. And it's just kind of, I think this is to Ben Johnson's point where he goes, or he was asked a question, oh, are you afraid that you're going to put all this stuff on tape and you're going to give teams film on what you guys are doing? He's like, oh, the well is so deep that I don't even care. I'll give you guys tape just to set up my next trick play. And what he's turned into, it's incredible.
I think he's so deep in his bag right now that he's just like, I can do whatever I want because I know I'm a head coach somewhere else next year.
Yeah,
And that's his mentality.
maybe. And it's incredible. Again, I don't think I've seen an offense operate like this. I mean, even the kind of the Mahomes Chiefs, like, yeah, they beat you, but they didn't necessarily run trick plays. It was just, oh yeah, you can't run with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce's always going to get open. That was kind of that offense. And it's incredible what he's doing. This offensive line is sensational. It's right up there with some of the best that I think you can kind of start talking about that we've ever seen.
I'll give criticism to one guy that I think you can look at as a
Taylor
guy not.
Decker. Good thing we extended him 2 weeks ago.
I not that he's been like necessarily awful, but he's no longer the prime top 5 to 10 left tackle in the league. He's just okay at this
Agreed. He
point.
has gotten kind of bullied. I mean, Arden Key had his way with him, especially to start that game. I mean, you look at the first quarter of that game, it's 14-14, and like, I think in the back of everyone's mind, they're just very briefly thinking, is this a trap game? Did we look over the phone at what's going on? And then suddenly, like you said, you blink and suddenly it's 35-14. You're like, ah, no worries, no worries. And then you blink again and it's 52. And you're like, well, where did this all come from? So.
I guess the only other note I have, and it's not really about the game specifically, Dan Campbell in the media this week doing his little elf jump, like
Yeah,
giddy jump,
well,
like
we'll see. We'll
it was
see.
so. I very rarely find him cringe, and like I find him motivating and a great coach. That was a little cringe.
It was. But the message is still there. Go trade for a fucking defensive end. I know right now, I think most people have kind of come around to the fact that a Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett are not available. And I think it's kind of turned into that kind of next tier of. Give me a Za'Darius Smith, give me a Trey Hendrickson if he's available, and just kind of coming to that, and we'll see what they do. I would be happy with either one of them. And I just look forward to making a move, and I guess hopefully making a move. I mean, by the time we're talking next week, the trade deadline will have happened, so we'll know if a move was made or not, and we can kind of sit here and maybe get a little bit outraged at the fact that for a second straight year, when this team is looking as good as it is, we've kind of torpedoed a chance to get even better, and you look around at some of the other teams that consider themselves among the NFL's elite. You have the Minnesota Vikings. Oh, you lose Christian Darrisaw. Boom. I trade for Cam Robinson. Oh, you're the Kansas City Chiefs. I lose Rashee Rice. Boom. I've got DeAndre Hopkins now. Oh, you're the Buffalo Bills, and we lose Stephon Diggs, and we kind of replace him with a bunch of rookies who kind of need some time to gel. Boom. Here's Amari Cooper. You look at the Baltimore Ravens, and I don't know what they need Deontay Johnson for, but boom. Now we've got him. And so this is what happens. Like, it's kind of almost like the NBA. This is kind of the arms race. Everyone's trading for that seventh man off the bench, the shooter, the three and D guy. Obviously, it is the NFL. The player mobility is not like it is in the NBA, but you do have the same kind of concept where I think GMs have realized my Super Bowl window is not 10 years. It's not 15 years. My Super Bowl window isn't even 5 years. I have a 2, maybe a 3 year period when something opens up, I need to go for it. And I would be very, very disappointed if the Lions spent another offseason sitting on their hands.
Agreed. And I love the point you made earlier at the beginning of this of is this peaking too early? You have the early bye week in this season, so it's going to be a bit of a gauntlet down the stretch. You're not going to get a mid-season bye week. You have a like you play two quality opponents here, but the way it opens up for you is like everything has gone your way this year so far, and now you play a Packers team that might not have Jordan Love. You play a Texans team the next week that just lost Stephon Diggs for the season. Things are opening up for the Lions in ways they've never seen. And I get this feeling in the back of my head like this is a lot of good things happening very, very soon.
Yeah. If you want to talk about a bad thing happening with the Lions, I think we have to talk about it because it's news again. Jameson Williams finds himself in the headlines once again for not even news story. This was a couple weeks ago. But for some reason, the Detroit Police Department kept it under wraps, and then after an internal review, suddenly it comes out. But I'm not gonna say torn on how to feel about this, because I don't think there's much to feel. It's just, this is another example of a guy who, once again, he does not wake up saying, "Oh yeah, I need to go ruin someone else's day. I need to." Like, no, he's not malicious in any way, but he lacks intelligence. He doesn't think anything through. He doesn't understand the rules of what he's trying to do in his life. Everyone loves pointing out, "Oh, well, Michigan's an open carry state." Yeah, it is. But if you're gonna ride around in your car, that's not considered open carry anymore. Now that's concealed. Where's your CPL, Jameson? How do you not know that when you're buying a gun? Like, how is this okay? How is this acceptable? It's just so frustrating that it's time and time again with this guy who just doesn't seem to make the informed, not just informed, because maybe he, like, actually, what he goes, "Oh, do you know where I live? I live in Detroit. I need this." It's like, that's a very well-informed decision that you feel that you need that for your safety, Jameson. Now go through the entire process of what it takes to actually own this the proper way.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add on that. I think you've covered that perfectly. Let's get on to the rest of the league. A bit of a weird, we talked about this being the week that was for college, a bit of a weirder week. I think it was kind of like a, I'm going to call the NFL week the loser leaves town. You had teams that established themselves as maybe leaders in the division and teams that aren't going to be that. And you had teams that established their season as being over, like the Bengals and the Jets. And then you also had some upsets mixed in there. You had the Cardinals beat the Dolphins back with Tua. Like I said, I think the Jets beating the pa or losing to the Patriots is a bit of an upset. The Browns with Jameis Winston, who's now I is he is it I think he's 8-2 in his last 10 starts. They
Classic.
beat the Ravens. And then you obviously cap it off with the story everybody's talking about, the Bears and Commanders. So where do you want to start?
Let's start with the New York Jets, because you just hate to see that. You hate to
Know.
see Aaron Rodgers fall flat on his face.
I
You
know.
hate to see the fact that they've run out of excuses. There's no one else left to fire. There's no one else left to cut. There's nothing else left to blame. You lose to the fucking Patriots, who have Drake May knocked out cold halfway through the game. You lost to Jacoby Brissett. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, there's literally no excuse for it. I know you give up 25 to a really bad offense, but Devontae Adams only has 54 yards and four catches in his first game as a team. Aaron Rodgers, a mediocre 17 for 28, 233. It is just like, I hope it sets the precedent back that Tom Brady ruined, that signing guys at 40 plus years old is not a smart decision. And in few in like prior to Tom Brady, it wasn't. And after Tom Brady, it still isn't. He's an anomaly. You're not named Tom Brady, and it's not going to work out your way, especially if you're the New York Jets, who are one of the more cursed franchises in this league.
Absolutely. I mean, 2-6, your season is completely over. It's just, you hate to see it. Did Hassan Reddick play? I didn't see any. I think he
I
did,
thought
right?
he was supposed to. I don't know if he actually did.
In any case, I just wanted to sit here and say, is there any more excuses they can say? "Oh, well, our defensive star and edge rusher isn't here yet, so we need him back." And it's like, no, Aaron, you torpedoed a football team. And it's kind of like, I don't know what Aaron
He
Rodgers'
didn't record a
contract.
stat if he did.
No, I don't know what Aaron Rodgers' contract situation is, if he's kind of a, this is the last year, if they're stuck with him again next year. But that, I mean, this is a diabolical situation for this franchise, who made basically one move, gave the power to this guy to make three, four, five moves, and now he set the franchise back three, four, five, 6 years.
I don't think he has more years on his contract. I saw a funny clip of a couple weeks back when it kind of went downhill. I believe they were 2-2 or 2-3 when they played the Broncos, who everybody thought was the dumpster fire at the beginning of the season, but somehow now is a quiet 5-3, and Sean Payton has them playing kind of like very solid complimentary football, as much as I don't like to compliment it, and the fact that they beat the Panthers, which is just like a gimme at this point. They're one of the more embarrassing teams ever, I think. I know they've won a game, so you can't say that, but
No, you can.
it's bad.
You absolutely can, because there's variation. Like, you can luck into a victory and just like lose the rest of them. And oh yeah, you might not have gone 0 and something, like let's say one of the Lions or the Browns did. But you look at that, like you go back to that 0-16 Lions team. Yeah, they lost every game, but at least they could compete. This
Yeah.
Panther team doesn't compete. They play a different sport than the rest of the league.
But
So
I'll say this on the Panthers side is like this is the way this league has gone now, and it's ruined parity. It's tough when there's upsets every week like there were this past week, but it's ruined parity to a certain extent because teams are either in or they're out, and you have a third of the AFC that has two wins or less, a third.
yeah, absolutely.
And that there's so many teams that just really aren't that competitive on purpose because teams know how much more likely those top of the line picks are to hit than once you get into the tens, the teens, the 20s, you lose it incrementally goes down the chance of you getting an impact player in those spots, and teams realize that now. But it's ruined the product on the field to a certain extent, and that the Panthers are not the only one that's like.
Yep. And I mean, we talked a little bit about it on the flip side of like teams loading up. You mentioned, oh, you want to know a good way to lose? Trade Deontay Johnson. You want to know a good way to
Right.
lose? Trade DeAndre Hopkins. You want to know a good way to lose? Trade the next guy. So yeah, you're right. This has kind of turned into a place where teams are more, I think they're just more willing to embrace the fact that they're bad and kind of toss away a season in the hopes that here comes the rookie quarterback next year and he'll save us. And it's like, it's a team sport. The quarterback's only on the field for half the fucking game. If you don't have a defense, if you don't have an offensive line to keep him healthy, you're just going to stare at Bryce Young situations over and over again where the guy's going to get
Yeah.
killed, lose his confidence, and kind of get benched. Speaking of
I
getting.
just wish, yeah, I just wish more teams, and this is a bit of an old man barking up the tree, but like you said, there it's no guarantee, and it's less than a 50-50% chance even those guys at the top turn out. Look at Anthony Richardson, number four last year, Bryce Young, number one in the same draft class. In those first four picks, two out of three of those guys are not going to be in the NFL within 3 years. And you'd like to see more teams try to play for a playoff spot. I know it's boring. I know you're not a true Super Bowl contender, but there's no one right now that's planning to be 9-8. There's no one right now that's doing what the Rams are doing and retooling or trading away picks to get good now or stay good or stay relevant for even longer. I just like it, I'm going to say it again, but it ruins the product a little bit for me.
Yeah, you mentioned the top three picks in the draft. I want to give Bryce Young just a little bit of kind of shielding because he went to one of the worst situations ever where they traded away
Of
McCaffrey,
course.
trade away future picks, have an atrocious line. And then you bring up Anthony Richardson. Who doesn't have Anthony Richardson has a pretty good situation as a quarterback. You've got a good triage of receivers between Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, Adonai Mitchell. You have a good offensive line. Now, it's not what it was 2, 3 years ago as the guys have gotten slightly older, but you have a good offensive line. You have a good running game to support you. You have a defense that tries. And somehow, I had him listed. I don't know if you saw the statistic. So from the year 2000, on a list of quarterbacks that have taken 250 dropbacks, basically just kind of, I don't want to call it passing attempts. They listed as dropbacks in the statistic in their career. Out of 225 eligible quarterbacks, can you guess what number he is?
200 and how many?
Out of 225 eligible.
220.
Worse.
224.
Little better.
223.
Little better. Bang.
222.
There you go. Out of the eligible quarterbacks of when it comes to kind of passing completion, he is the 222nd out of 225 quarterbacks. And from the three guys that are worse than him, two of them I forget. One of them was Tim
Okay.
Tebow. So
Oh,
that means
jeez.
Jamarcus Russell was a better passer than you. Ryan Leaf was a better passer than you. Those are some of the
Yeah.
biggest draft busts we have ever like talked about in the history of the sport. So you talk about that. I mean, he was 2 of 15 at the half. He was 2 of 15 at the half. And then what makes it worse is what he, I don't know if you saw what he did, on top of the fact that he can't complete a pass, he quit on the team. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
It's
I heard
third
he
and
was tired.
goal. Yeah, it's
I
third and
didn't
goal,
see
and
the
he
clip,
takes
though.
himself out of the game and says, "I'm tired."
Wow.
You don't get to do that, man. He's
I agree.
rightfully been benched. Joe Flacco is the starter going forward. And I've kind of seen some pushback from people online, and it's like, oh, well, dude, you preach patience, but then you cut this guy's chance after 10 games. It's like,
That is the argument.
you have to show something that is worth patience. He doesn't show that. Not to
Yeah.
mention, again, you can't quit on the team as the quarterback. And the other thing is kind of like the Patriots with Jacoby Brissett and then into Drake May. You cannot actively play a guy who hinders your ability to win every single week and ask a locker room to stay bought in. And the Colts, unlike the Panthers, unlike the Patriots, they don't plan on being bad. You were
Yep.
one play away from the playoffs last year, and you're 4-4 this year. This guy is going to be putting French fries in paper bags in a year. He's that
So
bad.
I actually have a different take in that, like, I think you can get away and justify this and not like the knock down the people that are like, oh, it's only 10 games and you're bailing on him, is that, like, I think the situation warrants him to not that this is not it, but this is, you're not ready for this. Like you said, we are trying to win games right now. We have a quarterback that has a better opportunity for that. Maybe we rushed you back from an injury last year. And you haven't showed us anything. It's time for you to maybe get the Jordan Love or somebody else where you now you take the time and sit back and learn. And that's why where I think like he's might be a little different than those situations, but I agree. I don't like the oh, he's only played 10 games argument when you're a team trying to win and the guy clearly hasn't showed you any intuition that he has the ability to do that right now.
All of his all of his passing statistics, they look like concert tour dates. 8 of 22, 10-30. He looks like he's trying to plan a world tour for Taylor Swift. That's what his passing stats look like. It's pathetic.
I like it. Where else do you want to go in the NFL?
Let's talk about the Bengals. You mentioned a team that's kind of season is probably over. I don't want to go quite there because
I do.
I looked ahead at their schedule, and there are some winnable games, and they can kind of get into the division games where if they can just go, say, they scratch it, go 3-3. I think, like you mentioned, a 9-8. No one's doing that. I think they can get there. But I will say this: that was an ugly loss. I mean, everyone sits here and talks about the Eagles being this team that's just teetering and waiting for kind of one bad moment to fire Sirianni,
Right.
and you get bullied. That was men against boys. They got shoved around the entire game. This was a game I had simultaneously on with the Lions, and as soon as the Lions went up by a lot, I was like, all right, I can start giving some more attention to this. And they did not look like they were an NFL team competing against an NFL team. It was ugly. Ran all over them, and that loss, maybe Trey Hendrickson's available now. Maybe he is. Maybe he's available next week. But if and when they hopefully lose to the Raiders, that's all I'll say.
Yeah. What else? What else? We mentioned Jameis. I mentioned Stephon Diggs being out. Dolphins without Tua. The Cardinals are frisky. I'll say that. But that was kind of a okay. This team like isn't back. I know they scored 27 points, so like you can't say they completely weren't back. And Tyreek Hill was actually like not completely a non-factor with Tua back, but. They're another team on that list that I was like, this is a week where they're done, unfortunately. And
Probably. Yeah.
the Cardinals in that division, look out, they're frisky.
I actually had them written down. So I have kind of been an enjoyer the last couple weeks of the Cardinals, or I say enjoyer, an avid watcher of the Cardinals as a Marvin Harrison Jr. dynasty owner. I've kind of been trying to figure out why he's putting up these like 2 for 20 stat lines. And I watched this game and obviously, this was a fucking perfect game. He showed great chemistry with Kyler, being able to kind of improvise on some plays. It actually looked like they were designing stuff for him, where one of the big knocks against everything that the Cardinals have done so far is they almost treat him like a sacrificial receiver, where he just kind of puts his head down, runs a go route, and takes two defenders with him, and they use him to kind of open up others, where they actually looked like they made a concerted effort to get him involved this week. You mentioned they win a game, they go to 4-4, tied for the division lead with Seattle, with San Francisco. The Rams are 3-4, so they're technically not even necessarily behind anyone. Everything's
Yeah.
still in their hands if they want to win their game that they have kind of in hand. So the NFC West as a whole is going to be something that's very, very kind of just open. The Cardinals also are 2-0 in the division. They have kind of early tiebreakers over San Francisco and over the Rams, who I think they played in week two. So you look at that as kind of something they can look ahead to for their status right now. And I think the NFC West is actually going to turn into kind of a fun little just division race. Now, I don't think those teams, given they already have four losses, are maybe going to be able to contend with the Detroit Lions or maybe an Eagles and Commanders at 6-2 apiece for the one seed in the NFC. But I think it will be a very fun division to see who can kind of take that playoff spot.
Yeah. Other stories. I'll go to the Monday night game. Mike Tomlin continues to do Mike Tomlin things and be a very good coach. I think that you can get rid of the mediocre Mike thing, and that like he's very good at controlling locker rooms, and he's done it year after year. He produces teams that compete and play hard. And the decision to put Russell Wilson back in has proved to be a good one
Yes.
so far. He while he's not the borderline Hall of Famer he was in Seattle, he is not the one of the worst contracts in history that he was in Denver. So it's been a nice balance, and I compliment him because I think he's gotten some flack the last several years, and people have forgotten just how good of a coach he is.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're taking the Kenny Picketts, the Mason Rudolphs of the world and leading them to playoff appearances, like that says a lot about you. Now, you want to sit there and kind of make the flip side argument, oh, they haven't made it to a Super Bowl in 14 years and they lost that one. And what, like that's fair. Like you can make the argument that being consistently good is cool, but if you're never great, what have you really won? So I understand that, but you are right that the guy deserves a lot of credit. What I mean, the Steelers were kind of openly laughed at when they kind of, I don't want to say united with Russ, but kind of had Russ on their roster and their team, and it became ha ha ha, look at these fucking morons. And
Right.
here he goes back to back weeks, putting up real points, kind of having that offense, which everyone has said in the past, oh, it sucks, it sucks, it sucks. They can move the ball now, and
Yeah.
Najee Harris looks rejuvenated. Not shocking that it's in a contract year after his fifth year option gets declined. I would also be playing harder for money than when I already have my money secured, but they're rolling. So 6-2, first in that NFC North with that Baltimore Ravens loss. And we'll see what they do. They kind of get to their meat and potatoes portion of the kind of schedule now, as we kind of talked at the beginning of the year, where all six of their divisional games are ahead of them. The Chiefs are ahead of them. The Eagles are ahead of them. I think they have another good team ahead of them. So we'll see what they can do.
Yeah, that's kind of the last storyline I had before we got into the
The big
biggest
one.
one.
The big one.
And that was the 1 versus 2 overall matchup, Bears Commanders and the Hail Mary, the story that was. Before we get into that, I mean, I watched a good chunk of this. Not a great football game
Oh, it was
overall. And
ugly. Ugly.
Caleb Williams was really, really bad for 3.5 quarters. But I'll tell you this. The last couple drives and in the fourth quarter to do what he did to get that team to come back and lose a game, or well, almost win a game that they should have lost. There we go.
Yes.
That's how I would describe that. Was commendable, and I think you watch, as ugly as it was, I watched that and I go, okay, both of these guys can be guys. Where
Yes.
Washington had no trouble moving the ball a lot of the times. They just kind of forgot how to play in the red zone and put the ball in the end zone, and Jaden Daniels was fine with that. But Caleb Williams struggled mightily throughout the game and into the fourth quarter. I think both of these guys are fine, despite this being really an ugly score and a really ugly game.
Yeah, the Commanders, I don't think the Commanders' defense gets as much kind of respect as it should. I understand the offense is incredible and they don't ever punt. It's actually insane, obviously, what Daniels is doing. It's kind of putting up
Yeah.
a season as, I don't, maybe the numbers aren't quite there just because defenses have changed, but a season as efficient as CJ Stroud did last year as a rookie. And I think with all that headlines and kind of spotlight, people have forgotten that defense that traded away Montez Sweat, that traded away Chase Young, that is kind of, I don't want to say gotten gutted, but it's not the same kind of headline defense as they used to have. They're very, very respectable. Maybe that's a testament to Dan Quinn, the coach. So good for them. And then, yeah, you mentioned ugly, ugly game. Chicago has no reason to ever be winning that game, especially after you fumble on the 1 yard line trying to hand the ball off to an offensive lineman. It's like, you're not Ben Johnson. Don't be funny. Like, you've got a big back, Roschon Johnson. You take ball, you turn around, you give to him,
Yeah.
and he scores. That is how it works. That's what they did on the second drive that reached the end zone at the end of that game. And believe it or not, he got into the end zone. So I don't really understand why. And then Eberflus kind of like, I'll get to him after that, but he kind of
Horrible.
sits that he's a pathetic coach, but he sat there and he tried to defend. He's like, oh, this is a great play call. It's like, no, it's really not. And you've got the players questioning it, where I think DJ Moore came out and said, yeah, we've been practicing this for like 2 months. I didn't think we'd ever really sit there and run it, but I guess we did. Just kind of openly saying, what the fuck are we doing? But let's get to the Hail Mary.
Jaden Daniels steps back. They had 23 seconds after the touchdown and 2-point conversion, and he has all the time in the world, A, which I think is something we'll get to. He gets the second chance, and I heard something with Bears fans on the on a podcast where he was basically like, I kind of was just like, uh-oh, once he got that like second chance where he got to run up and run into it. And while the throw may have been a bit short, we had Bears players that were doing other things in the sidelines or near the sidelines coming in late. The ball's tipped and it falls into the hands of Noah Brown. And it was just one of those, I just went, wow. One of those ones that you'll be on the highlight reel of the 2024 season forever. It's one of the greatest plays you could ever see live. It's one of the coolest plays, especially given the, I've already forgotten his name on the
Tyreek
Bears
Stevenson.
side. There it is. Forgetting where he was in the world for a minute and just going crazy on some Commanders fans while they were playing football. But your thoughts on what was the best play of the season so far?
Yeah, well, the best play of the season actually starts the play before. I think there was 7 seconds left, and the Bears are in kind of a Hail Mary protect defense. And Jane Daniels throws a pass to Terry McLaurin for 13 yards, and he gets out of bounds, and there's 1 second left before the clock snaps. And that's really where the Hail Mary starts, because that's actually what put them in Hail Mary range, despite what, once again, Matt Dumbass Eberflus thinks. And we'll get to what he said about that. But that play enabled them to get the Hail Mary to the line, because I mean, you watch that play back, and yeah, it starts Tyreek Stevenson. You get all the videos from the crowd. He's sitting there, jawing, taunting, flaunting, flipping birds, whatever he's doing, and then doesn't realize the play's going on. He does that for 4 or 5 minutes, turns around. I'm sure he probably said to himself, oh shit, goes right into kind of the masses of bodies, completely forgets that he's supposed to be on Noah Brown as the box out guy. Jumps up for a pass that he has no business jumping up for, and he's the one that tips it into Noah Brown's hands. That's what makes all this even better. It's a
I
triple
know.
whammy. So that's a Hall of Shame play. That's kind of like the Mark Sanchez butt fumble, where if ESPN still does a not top 10, I'd expect this to stay number one for so long that they just retire the play because they feel bad that no one else can get to number one. And I think you kind of asked the question where you're like, how does he not get cut on the spot? And it's, he has just enough leash where he's their cornerback two behind Jalen Johnson. He's pretty good as a cornerback too. So I think he had just enough leash to make that kind of just galaxy of a mistake and still have the ability to apologize to his teammates, because that, I
Well,
mean, yeah,
Twitter, did you see his apology on Twitter?
I did not.
Oh, it was like right after the game, he tweeted something. And the mentions were pretty funny.
Yeah. And then let's talk quickly about Matt Eberflus, because I want to talk about his comments and then basically what that means for us as the Lions. Matt Eberflus in a post-game presser says that 13-yard completion to Terry McLaurin made no difference in the overall outcome. It's like, first of all, you're fucking stupid, because it does, because Jaden Daniels barely got that. Jaden Daniels actually didn't get that ball into the end zone. That was dropping at the one before it was tipped. So don't tell me that 13 extra yards means the ball's still landing at the one for a tip. If you don't line up and just give away those yards, that Hail Mary never gets to you. And then it turns into the old school kind of just play of, oh, lateral this, lateral that, and it eventually turns into a player who throws it forward because that's the only option he has left, and you win the game. And then you continue to defend it, where they ask him again, do you think you should have taken a timeout? And he's like, no, our players were ready. Were they? You had a guy who wasn't facing the snap. Were your players ready there, Matt? Were they? Were they ready? So he might be one of the worst head coaches in football. I don't really know how he survived the kind of the Luke Getsy axing last year, and I don't know how he's been allowed to work with Caleb Williams. They kind of should have just said,
That's
hey, Ryan Poles or Ryan Pace, I forget which one's the GM, but you executed this masterclass trade to kind of give us all these opportunities. Congratulations. You pick your head coach that's going to work with Caleb Williams, and then we'll all go together. I don't understand why he's still here, because this season, if it ends up with them going poorly, ends up with Matt Eberflus getting fired, and then you've
For
just kind of
sure.
torpedoed a year where someone could have worked or could have done more with Caleb in year one. And the thing that kind of makes me happy as a Lions fan is, as long as Matt Eberflus is there, they'll find ways to lose games they shouldn't, and it kind of they'll still stay a frisky team. Obviously, this doesn't change anything that way, but I don't necessarily fear the Chicago Bears with an idiot at head coach. And that game specifically, while it I don't think the way you've said, I don't think this ever would have happened. But if you wanted all four NFC North teams in the playoffs together, that was a game you had to win so that the
Yeah.
Chicago Bears could have the tiebreaker over the Commanders later down the line. They've lost that, so they would now would need to beat them outright. And yeah,
The
so
Bears play a gauntlet down the stretch
they do.
too.
They do. So we'll see what they do, but that's just kind of how I saw it. So shout out to Matt Eberflus. I hope he stays there forever, because that makes the life for the Lions just that much
Yeah,
easier.
not only to add on to that, but like this is a talented enough roster where they'll win 9 games. It's like, well, do we fire him? Even though you absolutely should fire him. That's the problem they're in right now, is that like I still, even with this roster, they'll still have to make a decision that will be hard for them. It shouldn't be. For the public, it's not that hard, but for them, it will be, because they've been bad the last couple of years, and you see some success and some growth under him, and you are like, well, what else could it be? Even
Are
though it's the fact that your GM has made some very, very good decisions over the last couple of years.
you perhaps calling Matt Eberflus Jim Caldwell, where it's just not good enough?
It's,
Or
yeah,
is he
kind
worse
of.
than that?
And I was going to make a crazy comparison too when you said how you're wasting a year of Caleb Williams' development in this regime. I almost was going to say to it's not going to be the same, because he's got like enough pieces around him. And their offensive line sucks, by the way. I know he's got a ton of offensive weapons around him, but their offensive line is very, very bad. And I was going to compare it to Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence.
Oh wow. I think Urban Meyer did much worse things, but I can't necessarily hate that,
Yeah.
where it's like,
Oh yeah. I'm just saying, like, it's going down that path. Like, it reminds me of that. It's a less extreme version of that.
and again, it's not to say that like you're gonna permanently break Caleb, but it's more of just a you're gonna have a guy who's gonna be there for 1 year, who's gonna work with Caleb, do the things that he wants with Caleb, and then you're gonna axe him, then here comes another guy, and Caleb's gotta learn the second system.
Right.
And you're like, why didn't we just start fresh with Caleb the first time? We're on the same 3 year leash, the three of us, that being GM, head coach, and quarterback. And if we put everything together with all of these extra tools that we've gotten at the expense of the Panthers, we can be a good team past that, and we can have a nice long second contract as GM, as coach, and as quarterback.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And like you said, it's fun to see this happen to a division rival and all these hard decisions
Yeah,
have to be
hate
made.
to see it.
But the Lions play a big one against the Packers next week. 3.5 point favorites at Green Bay. I was looking at the schedule. This is what we'll close on. The Lions don't have very, and I know it's because they're one of the best teams in football, and they've got plenty of prime time games down the stretch. They don't have that many 1 o'clock games the rest of the season.
Good. Actually, no, not good. I like when there's 1 o'clock games.
I like when just for hockey purposes, I like when there's 1 o'clock
The
games,
1 o'clock games are fun, yeah. But yeah, hopefully we can storm down to Lambeau. Apparently it's supposed to be raining all week or all day that day, so maybe it
hard.
turns into a battle of the trenches where you have to believe you have the advantage.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. So I have nothing else to add. I'm kind of ready to wrap this up. Anything else to you before we go to final words?
No, I'm ready to wrap this one up as well. It's been a good episode. Lots of football talk. We'll obviously be at it again next week with more football talk and a little bit of a preview for. Oh, I would kind of wanted to mention the World Series, but we'll mention it next week when it's over, although it might be over in like an hour from now. So.
All right, from myself, I'm gonna leave everyone off with a go Lions.
Go Yankees.